Every single day I feel
the Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm best, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back to That One Studio. It's your boy Sirach here with the Hit Up Show.
Music licensing reimagined.
You know, when I'm not recording, I feel like something's missing in my life. And it's always good to be back here. I feel like this is my home. And I bring great guests. And as we bring these great guests to you to share the ingredients that have gone into making them who they are, to inspire you, I make friends right in front of you. Right in front of you, I get to know people. And some of the people that I have on the show I've met before, others I haven't. Katie Yu's one I haven't, and we reached out to her, my team and I, just because we think that she's doing cool things, and we're excited to hear about what's gone into getting her started on doing some of these cool things, and then where her journey is going to go. So Katie is here. She's a 23-year-old master student studying in London, part lifestyle creator, part mental health advocate. She aims to bring youth mental health to the forefront of conversations, and she shares her journey as a 20-something through her podcast, mainly Solidarity on the Bench. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining us. And folks listening, you guys can listen to the podcast. Go look it up. It's Solidarity on the Bench. We'll have the show notes in there, the link, but you just go look that up. Katie Yu, EU. You can check her out. And also on Instagram, katie.eu. You can see her post there. She's a creator as well. She does some good things, and you can see her going around London doing her thing. So Katie, we start this show the same way every time, and we're really curious what comes off the top of your head when we ask you the question, what are you made of?
That is a good question. I had to think about this for a second, so it's not necessarily off the top of my head, but I would say I am made of everyone around me. I love the idea that you are a mosaic of everyone that has ever touched you and influenced you in your life. And I know that I'm a big piece, like my mom and my dad and my family is very important to me. So they're a big piece of who I am and how I love and the person I am today. But furthermore than that, like friends, family, just acquaintances off the street as well. Everyone has contributed to the person that I am today.
That's awesome. I love it. It's like a pot, and all these ingredients go into it, and some are experiences, some are influences. But are you originally from London, or did you grow up somewhere else and then you're just there for school? Like, how did that all work out?
Yeah, so like you, I have an American accent. I am actually was born and raised
I thought I noticed a British accent.
No.
I thought you'd like a spot of tea. No? Okay,
I was born and raised in Hong Kong. So I was there for about 15 years. And then I spent 8 years in California, LA specifically, for my high school and my undergrad. And now I'm here in London for the year, but maybe more depending on, you know, where I end up taking my life. Who knows at this point? As you mentioned, I am only 23. So the world is kind of my oyster. But I'm studying here, getting my master's for the year.
Awesome. And what subject are you studying and focused on?
So I'm focused on behavioral science with a specialization in well-being, which I feel like tracks with everything I do on the internet. And so my focus, especially in research, is mainly about happiness, well-being as a whole. And I'm really interested in policy. And so I'm taking some really cool electives this term about, you know, well-being for policy and like quantifying well-being and all of that.
Yeah. And where did this all start for you? Like the interest in this, like where were there some experiences as a youngster that you just started to realize like, wow, like, and like, you know, it woken you up to the need for this?
Oh, yeah. I feel like everyone kind of in this psychology field or who studies mental health have either struggled with mental health or know of someone who has struggled with mental health. So I am in the former. I am pretty open actually with, you know, my struggles with mental health. I was started to feel feelings of depression and anxiety when I was 11. And I didn't get officially diagnosed until I was 18, but I was struggling a lot with my own personal, you know, mental health, especially when I was a youth and developing and becoming the person I was. And I didn't have any answers and I didn't know what was going on. And so a lot of what I aim to do on the internet, just with my podcast and with my Instagram and my entire presence, honestly, is to kind of showcase my process of you know, learning and figuring out who I am with a very big emphasis on mental health, because I want to show people and, you know, me when I was younger that like, this is normal. People struggle with mental health, and like, this is how you can kind of identify your struggles and come out of it stronger than ever.
And do you think like there's a cause for it? Is there like a societal pressure or societal programming that's going on by those in power, do you think, or just your thoughts from your studies or just your beliefs of it? Would love to hear your perspective of if it's intentional that this is put upon everyone, but especially youngsters.
I always think about the conversation that it's like, are people, especially in Gen Z, which I'm a part of, like, are we more depressed than the generation above us? Or is it because we have more language for us to be able to speak on our experiences and ask for that help? And so I know mental health is a very big conversation in my generation. And especially, you know, with COVID, mental health became the forefront, like well-being was kind of the forefront in everyone's minds, because we really just pared everything back into thinking about health, both physical and mental. And so I think honestly, it could be a combination of both. And I will be, you know, one of the youths to like agree with the adults of like social media and phone usage definitely does not help with mental health. And I think we as a generation are struggling with a lot of things that no one can understand, because phone usage and my own screen time is like 8 hours a day. Like, we don't know the impacts of phones and social medias on our mental health. But I would also, you know, argue for other like cultural and social factors that are outside of just phone usage. Like, I just think that mental health in conversation, like regardless of whether or not it is more so effective of Gen Z, I think honestly, just having the language and providing people with language, like I do a lot of things on my personal pages, which is like, this is how you explain your feelings. This is how you ask for help. This is how you can vocalize your needs. So providing more education like that is also allowing people to be able to ask for the help that they need. And so I think it goes both ways, right? Like maybe there is more of a mental health crisis within our youth, but also maybe it's because we are empowering youth with the language to ask for help.
And so there's more attention on it.
Exactly.
And more energy. Okay. So coming from Hong Kong, what was that like coming to the United States? How old were you when you came from Hong Kong?
So I was 15 when I moved. Okay, and so yeah, I like grew up. I was quite young. In my mind,
you were
quite
young, but you still were at an age where you were established in Hong Kong, you know, that culture. And then you come to the United States. What was that transition like for you?
So I was, I kind of grew up like with an international background already. And so in terms of culture shock, that was a lot easier. I didn't go from, you know, an Asian culture to a Western culture. I was always kind of socialized in both of those. But a key factor in Asian culture that I like to kind of speak on more now that I have a platform and an identity as a mental health creator is like this idea that mental health and especially academic pressure is not talked about enough in Asian culture. And we have this pressure to do well. You know, you've heard of helicopter moms, like tiger moms, things like that. And I never had one of those, thank goodness, but I did see, you know, a lot of my friends be impacted and influenced by a lot of those cultural norms. And so something I do like to talk about, especially with like my background in Hong Kong and also in the US, is comparing and contrasting maybe cultural differences and how that can, how that affects like our stress level and our mental health.
Yeah. And so coming into the high school, because it's 15, you were high school, 10th, 11th grade or somewhere in that range.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? Was a transition smooth for you? Like, were people accepting? And you did you speak good English at that point?
I did. Yes. So English is my first language. So
the communication parts always can be a difficult part. But
yeah, absolutely. It was definitely like a cultural, there was a cultural shock. Like, let's not get it twisted. Even coming from such an international city like Hong Kong, moving to LA, moving into a suburb, like I didn't really understand, you know, what it meant not to live in a walkable city. And so that in and of itself, like that lifestyle change was a huge shock for me. But I also came in and I've like always been old for my grade, because I actually ended up repeating my freshman year, not because of like, academics or anything, but just because I didn't want to be a sophomore in an eighth grade math class, like at 15, that was like peak embarrassment. So I ended up coming in with like 20 other freshmen in the freshman class in my high school. And so that was helpful in terms of the transition, but as you can imagine, definitely was hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you think that contributed to some of the issues that you felt, you know, experienced or felt?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, talking a lot about cultural differences, I think that like just learning and understanding, there's a big emphasis on things that we didn't talk about when I was growing up, like on socioeconomic status and culture and race. And, you know, America is definitely more of a melting pot than in Hong Kong. Like in Hong Kong, everyone kind of looked like me. We all had the same, you know, background and these same experiences almost. And so coming into America and being exposed to a lot of that, that was the big cultural shock for me, is like, I was familiar with the US. I came, my grandparents lives in the US and I would come visit for the summers, but visiting and living is very, very different. And so trying to navigate that, especially in the formative years of being in high school. And I think high school is just hard for everyone. Like, I don't really know anyone who has had a overall positive experience in high school. I think high school, there's just many, many struggles that a teenager faces. And so it definitely didn't help that I was, you know, new and from a different, basically a different background. But I also, had less academic pressure on me, which was really nice. And a big reason of why I moved was because the academic system in Hong Kong wasn't something that I was really thriving in. I was in the, you know, international baccalaureate program, and I was not really great with the way that they were assessing me. And so getting to move into the AP program in the US was very, very helpful in terms of my overall mental health and like stress levels academically.
Yeah. So then when you got out of there and you went to undergrad, what made you decide to go to London?
Very good question. I mean, why not is the, maybe the answer I can give you. I think I recognize that I'm extremely privileged and I'm able to kind of jump continents and move continents like I do. I also think that there's so much value in being able to live and start different lives in very different like places. And so I think one of the big shifts in like who I became, like why I am the person I am today, was because I moved in such like a formative time in my life. And so I think I experienced a lot of that same transformational growth when I came here to London. But like the more concrete reasons of why London specifically is because my school, LSE, was like a dream for me ever since I was in high school. Like LSE as an economist, I studied economics in my undergrad. That is just like, you know, the creme of the creme, like everyone wants to go there. And so that's the school I go to. I'm very blessed and lucky and like still sometimes pinch myself that I got in and I'm able to study at this cool institution. So for me, that was always kind of a bucket list goal. And also my sister lives here. So it's really nice to have, yeah, some family. I didn't kind of like move continents by myself. I do have some sort of support system here, which is really nice.
Awesome. And then, so let's talk about, well, let me talk about future first, and then we're going to get into content and things. Cause I saw you had some pretty viral posts. I mean, you've done pretty good on Instagram with some reels and things and views like through the roof. Mm-hmm. A few have gone to millions, right? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that in a second, but I want to talk about future. Like, what's the vision for you right now? Not that you have to have it all figured out, but like, what are you moving towards once you get your degree? And, you know, like what, if I could snap my fingers and make it happen, like, what does that look like?
Ooh, employment is such an in for 2024. but me personally, what I'm interested in is actually mental health research, which I feel like comes as no surprise looking at my content. But I'm really passionate and I really enjoy doing academic research. So I, like, a dream job for me would be working in something like a think tank, a private sector, maybe a governmental role where I'm allowed to do research on policy that impacts mental health. And so my research expertise is specifically the intersection of technology and social media on mental health and attitude shifts and identity building. And so that's what I focus on, and a great career path goal for me is to kind of move forward into that, into a research role.
I love it. And are you an entrepreneur? Like, do you have the entrepreneur spirit?
Somewhat, I feel like, but not, I feel like not as much as you would expect.
Yeah. Yeah. And then how about like, if you're doing these studies and how policy works, like, you know, in the United States, like a lot of things are predicated upon where the money is and where the money's going and the power that people hold. And even mm-hmm. to the point where they use psychology to sway people one way or the other. And so how do you plan on, like, when, if you get into that, like really going up against that, like, because, you know, you and I want people to be happy. I want people to have like the, you know, live the life of their dreams, mm-hmm. but we're going against sometimes a bigger force that has a lot more power and momentum behind it. So what are your thoughts on that, first of all? And then like, how do you think that we could counteract that?
Very big questions. I feel like I don't have the answers to them, but some preliminary thoughts and why studying in the UK has actually been so beneficial is because I'm kind of learning a different political system. So I've learned a couple of them now, you know, Hong Kong, the US, and now the UK. And specifically in the US, that was kind of where my focus was. Most of my political understanding is about the US systems. And I also understand how slow it is to move policy, especially policy that it has no economic incentive behind it. So it is discouraging, definitely, to be super interested in this field and then be hit with the reality that, like, maybe the changes that I want to see are not going to be as fast or as broad sweeping as I had initially hoped. But that isn't going to stop me from, you know, dreaming big and reaching big. But I also am humbled by, you know, how the politics in the US especially work and how everything is kind of money motivated.
Yeah, yeah. So do you see yourself as an influencer at some point, like where you'd be known by millions of people and then people would be buying books that you may write or come to hear you speak at different things? Is that like part of your vision?
I think the funny thing is, and what I always say is, like, I never kind of set out to be an influencer. I just kind of fell into it. And so when you ask about entrepreneurial spirit, I'm not the type of person who kind of seeks out that type of fame. And honestly, most times I forget that I'm known on the internet, which is really funny. So it was just something that kind of fell into my lap, for better or for worse, over the course of a couple of years. But I really did start out just to kind of share my story, share what I've learned, and also use the internet as like an accountability diary for what I was learning and doing in my healing journey.
Yeah. And so let's talk about that. Some of these posts have gone viral. Like, what was the first one you remember that went viral and you were like, whoa, wait a minute, this thing's hitting?
Yeah. So I used to make a lot of like static swipe posts that were kind of around emotional intelligence. And so they were called my how-to series. And I would just make posts like how to be alone, how to love yourself, how to set boundaries, how to work out intuitively, like these very big topics that everyone kind of talks about on the internet, but no one really knows how to implement into their lives. And so I was like, okay, as someone who is also struggling with a lot of these things, but as someone who loves research and as someone who likes to present things in a very concise way, why don't I start something where I'm able to, you know, do a lot of the back end work and I can give people journal prompts, short-term tips, long-term tips, like definitions about what these things are and make that barrier to entry of like a lot of good wellness habits smaller for, you know, and more accessible for the average user. And so my first post that ever hit kind of like a million in terms of the reach was my very first how-to post, which is kind of funny. And so that was how to be alone. And it really was coming from someone, I made it 2.5 years ago. It was coming from someone who was so uncomfortable with being alone and what that meant for me and having a lot of social anxiety around that, that coming from that perspective and giving both my perspective and also more like concrete advice that people can use, I think that mix and that blend, and then also how I presented the information really hit home with Instagram. And so I ended up making about a year's worth of those posts. I want to say I made 45 of the how-to posts, and they're kind of scattered throughout my Instagram page. I haven't made them in a really long time, but that was kind of what skyrocketed a lot of my growth.
And that's, you know, by the way, congratulations. It's awesome.
Thank you.
And what kind of feedback did you get from people?
It was overwhelmingly positive, as you can probably imagine. I had a lot of good people, like I had a lot of good suggestions on topics to cover. And I think that in that year of creating that kind of content, it also skyrocketed my growth because it made sure that I was focusing on a very small, like, subsect of my recovery in some way. And so if I was researching and thinking about, okay, how do I give concrete tips about how to work out intuitively, I would then end up using a lot of what I was learning in my life. And so it was a very symbiotic relationship, me and those posts. It not only helped me, you know, personally, but it also helped my Instagram grow.
And do you think that it's the way the content appears, like certain graphics or captions, or do you think the content's more important?
I think definitely the content was more important. And I started posting these, I want to say April of 2021. And so that was kind of when vulnerability and authenticity on Instagram and online in general was kind of, it was surfacing a little bit more. I mean, people were posting a lot and being very vulnerable in the time of COVID. But to be able to be vulnerable in a way that isn't trauma dumping or in a way that actually helps move the needle in the conversation forward and is more, you know, other person focused as opposed to your own story. That's the content that was missing at the time. And I think that was what my how-to post did and why they worked so well.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, the thing is that there's nobody better to help people do something, accomplish something than someone that's already done it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't help but look at this and think to myself, like, wow, this could be a business for you. Like, this could be seriously when somebody looks at this and they're like, well, she's done it. Okay, well, how could I do it? And then you pick your clients wisely to make sure that they have the ability to fulfill and execute. But nonetheless, this is a very valuable thing to know how to do. And it's not like you did one and had one viral post. Like, numerous posts have tens of thousands of views, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's like, I see this opportunity, and then it's like, you got to want to do it too. And it's got to make, you know, bring you passion. But like, when I see opportunity like this, I'm like, wow, there's a lot of people that would pay you money to show them how to do this or do it for them. Obviously they'd have to shoot the content. Is that ever the thing that crossed your mind or interests you?
I think something that a lot of people might resonate with is just this idea of not feeling good enough, not feeling ready. And for me, with content creation, and I feel like one of the reasons why I don't really want to take influencing full time is because there's like this limiting mindset that what I have to say is not necessarily that important. And so it always feels really nice to hear someone, you know, on the outside saying like, you could charge for this, like you can make a living out of this. But for some reason, for me, and that's probably also hand in hand with like this non-entrepreneurial spirit that I have, honestly, is like, I just don't feel like I'm in a position to charge people. Like, I just want to give out this content for free.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's the thing, like what you have here, you can give your content out for free because people aren't paying a subscription to see these posts.
Mm-hmm.
But to help people do this themselves for themselves, to put it together and all that, because you already have done it. So you can't say you're not worthy of it because you've already done it and you know how to do it because you're doing it over and over and over again. So if you document what you've done and then you just share that out there, that's valuable. And, you know, like, when I'm just sharing this with you because it's like from my point of view in entrepreneurship,
yeah,
like the research stuff, right? That a lot of times at first, you're not going to make millions of dollars doing that. And I'm not even saying money matters to you, but money is important, right? But what if you could make money doing this stuff here and that frees you up to be freed up to really do what you're passionate about, which is the research, and the money doesn't even come into play with the research. It's like, okay, I make whatever I can make, but I get to do the research and I get to accomplish my mission. So just some things to think about. I like to stir things and ask questions, you know, to make people think.
Very good to consider. And actually, funnily enough, like this week, I'm super busy with just like a bunch of coffee chats with my old bosses and stuff like that in terms of thinking about what I want to do moving forward. So it is I really do appreciate, you know, that perspective and that insight as well, because I think there's a lot of limiting mindsets around feeling good enough or feeling ready to do something like that.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you right now, you're ready. Whether you feel it or not, that's all a lie. To like the emotions that we have sometimes, like that we can't, the limiting stuff, it's all a lie. So you have like, I just want to throw some other ideas out to you.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you put some content out there and just said, hey, listen, I'm going to start a group and I'm going to show you how I've done all this stuff. And we're going to meet once a week or once a month or whatever. And it's X amount to get in, but just DM me if you're interested, DM me the word, whatever. And you set up a funnel to go to that route. And then you just show up on Zoom once a month or, you know, once a quarter, once a week, whatever. You start a community. And then what you can do inside that community is really serve your purpose and mission, which is to talk about mental health and make it a topic that people could talk about. And then you're also talking about content production. And you have this community that's supporting each other now. And then this thing exponentially grows and the impact exponentially mm-hmm. grows as well, because of the people that you're bringing in. So this is something to think about. I can't help but see the opportunity here for you, and then also encourage you that it's right in front of you if you want.
Yeah. I mean, so. I appreciate the passion, the encouragement. And I think that honestly, like, it's like marketing, right? You have to hear something like 5 to 7 times for it to sink in. So I'm like, okay, I'm at that upper limit threshold where like people have been telling me this, and it really just is on me to do something about it, whether or not that is changing my limiting beliefs or actually taking that action.
So are you telling me that I need to say it to you 5 more times right now? Like, I'm just kidding with you. All right. So, and by the way, you're on my show now. So now we're friends. So if you need something and guidance on this, like you have access to some really powerful information and experience here. So just to let you know,
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And there's no reason that, you know, you can't accomplish any of the stuff that you set out to accomplish. So, Katie, as we wind down here, what's the message that you really want to dial in for people and let them know? As we wrap up, like, what do you want to leave them with?
Something I've been thinking about for me personally, and if you're interested in content creation, mental health, any of this, hopefully it resonates, is that, you know, your story is unique. Your authenticity and your vulnerability is your superpower. And we're seeing a new change in our generation, the way that we're thinking, and then also in content creation and the way that people show up on the internet, is like, we want real stories. We want to hear from real people. And I know so many people, I mean, myself included, like there are these limiting beliefs that like what you say don't matter. But what I've realized and what I see, especially with my platform, is, you know, it is my story that matters. It's the story that matters, and the way that you deliver it, the method in which you do that. And that all comes later. And so once you realize that what you have to say is valuable and powerful, you know, kind of stepping into that and not being afraid to share your experiences, because what you've gone through can help someone else. And if you just help one person, that is already something huge, right? You've helped yourself and one other person. You've made the world a better place.
Awesome. Well, Katie, go check her out on Instagram, katie.eu. She's awesome, as you guys have heard, and her content's even more awesome. You can get to know her better there. And also, guys, listen, if you're listening and you're wondering how to get views, how to create content, just DM Katie, and whether she charges you for it or not, I'm sure she'll help you one way or the other. I'm going to have to help her with this, because there's got to be some kind of exchange of value for her if she's going to help you. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. Thank you all for listening. Katie, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike. I really appreciate it.
All right. Listen, that one crew, keep coming back. Keep supporting us. We really appreciate you. If you could subscribe, like, download, I don't know, all the stuff you need to do on a podcast. We asked you to do that, and we appreciate it. And keep coming back, more importantly. It's your boy C-Rock signing off from That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of show. Until next time, be that one. I can leave it all to chances, make it certain.